Good evening. I'm Jessica Marpey, welcoming you to this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Vincent Hughes of the 7th Senate District will take your calls as we discuss year-round education and how it could work within the Philadelphia public school system. Senator Hughes will be joined by Dr. Tony Watlington, the Philadelphia School Superintendent. If you have a question or would like if you have a question or you would like to participate in the conversation tonight, please press star 3 on your keypad. Again, that's star 3 to submit a question or a comment to tonight's discussion. And now, without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Vincent Hughes.
Thanks, Jessica. I know that's a lot of syllables over there. I know that was a roughie. Appreciate you.
It's been a long day.
Yeah, it has been. Hey, everyone, it's Senator Hughes here. Welcome to this telephone town hall for everybody in the 7th Senatorial District. I'd like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedule to participate on tonight's call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I really, really appreciate your engagement and your engagement and your participation and your feedback. If you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's conversation, press star 3 on your phone. I'm going to say that again. If you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's conversation, press star 3 on your phone. As Jessica said, tonight we'll be discussing year-round education. We'll be joined by Dr. Tony Watlington, the School District of Philadelphia Superintendent. Dr. Watlington was appointed Superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia, the nation's 8th largest school district with nearly 200,000 students, on April 1, 2022. Dr. Watlington has over 4 decades of experience as both an educator and a leader. We're really honored and blessed to have him on the call with us this evening. A reminder, once again, if you'd like to join the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Before we get to the conversations, I want to remind folks about another issue that we need to make sure we're helping to get the word out. Now, some of you may have applied for financial assistance through the Pennsylvania Homeowner Assistance Fund. All individuals who applied for the Pennsylvania Homeowner Assistance Fund for foreclosure assistance are being asked to re-register in the fund's new system for the application to be processed. I have to say this, the first system didn't work out too well. There was a lot of glitches in the system, and there was a need to restart the whole program all over again. So if you've registered one time, if you registered first, we're going to need you to re-register in the Pennsylvania Homeowners Assistance Fund. Once you are re-registered in the new system, you can easily access your application to check on its status. Applicants can register online at pahaf.org/register or by calling 888-987-2423. 888-987-2423. The call center is open Monday through Friday, 8 to 7 p.m. All applicants must re-register for their application to be processed and eligible for foreclosure assistance. Of course, if you have any questions, just call my office at 215-879-7777. So, yeah, we wanted to make sure we get that word out. Jessica, you have anything more on that one before we turn it over to Dr. Watlington?
Yeah, just to reiterate what Senator Hughes said, you can reapply online at pahaf.org/register. You can call the phone number at 888-987-2423, or you can reapply in person on July 29th. The Pennsylvania Homeowner Assistance Fund will be holding a reapply session from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Enterprise Center. The address is 24 South 52nd Street. Again, that's the Enterprise Center at 24th South 52nd Street from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on July 29th if you'd like to reapply in person.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Jessica. And again, if you got any questions, go to their website, pahaf.org/register, or call 888-987-2423. And, of course, you can always call my office, 215-879-7777. So let's get along with the conversation. We're here till 7 o'clock, and this is an important conversation. And we just want to begin the process of talking through folks with this issue about expanded hours and days for school. And, of course, it leads into a bigger conversation about year-round schooling. And I'd like to get the conversation going on just by giving Dr. Watlington, who was our guest this evening, just a couple minutes. Dr. Watlington, just need to take a couple minutes to begin to just give the broad concept of your view about extra hours, extra time on task, and extra days and year-round schooling. So welcome to the 7th Senatorial District by the phone. The floor is yours, Dr. Watlington.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I really appreciate all of your advocacy and support for both the 7th Senatorial District as well as the School District of Philadelphia. Just can't thank you enough for your leadership in Harrisburg. One of the strategies in our new strategic plan titled Accelerate Philly is to pilot a year-round school calendar in up to 10 schools beginning in August of 2024. Not August of this year, but August of next year. Why do we want to do that? Number one, as I have gone around this great city over the past year, I have heard from many, many parents who want better outcomes for our children, and they expect us to deliver on it. One way to, among other ways to do this, is to have a 12-month calendar, extended year calendar, in up to 10 schools so that in the summer, kids don't lose what they learn. It's called the summer slide. We can eliminate the summer slide with a year-round school calendar. In addition to that, we think even during the year, if we give our young people who need more time beyond the 180 days, it can work really well if we make sure we have highly qualified teachers, which is the number one factor in the research, if we make sure we have a highly qualified principal, give them the best curriculum possible, if we build partnerships with parents and have high expectations, follow this 12-month calendar, it's a winning recipe for improving reading and math performance. And we know we have many, many smart young people here in the city of Philadelphia, so I'm excited to begin to work this fall to make the case for parents that we're not going to force schools to do it. We want to make the case to parents and build a demand, an opt-in model. We also want to spend this fall semester working very closely with our union partners to figure out how to make this work beginning next fall. So I'm excited about this opportunity, Senator.
Thanks, Dr. Watlington. I'm going to go with the first question. And I really appreciate you, you know, diving deep into some of the process issues and having what's clearly a inclusive process for getting to this decision. Some of the research, I shouldn't say some of it, but I think pretty much all the research has indicated, both here in Pennsylvania and nationally, that the COVID pandemic really did some serious damage to all children's academic standing. And when I say all children, I'm not just talking about city kids, but rural school districts, suburban school districts, all across the country, in fact, probably all across the world, really suffered dramatically with respect to their academic progress. Is that I call it an academic pandemic, but is that what your research is indicating as well?
Absolutely. You are absolutely spot on, Senator. You've coined a new term for us with the academic pandemic. not sure if I've seen the researchers use that word, but you are absolutely.
That's mine. Correct. That's mine. Yeah. So, this was for all income levels, all colors. This was pretty much everybody has suffered dramatically, right?
We've seen an across-the-board drop in academic performance across the entire United States. When we look at test scores with the National Association of Education Progress, the NAEP test, which often is referred to as the nation's report card, it has affected all states, all income groups, all race, ethnicities, and so we need to make sure that we do best by our children here in Philadelphia.
Right, right. So best practices, you know, highly trained teachers and academic professionals, everybody who's in the school building, and communities as well, families and everyone else. I know you've thought about, you know, parents and providing supports for them as well. Are you making any progress in that space?
Oh, absolutely. We are going to have an aggressive campaign to get out in the streets, in the city, in neighborhoods. We're going to visit faith-based organizations and other places to take the message directly to parents, because we know it's so important that parents understand how this can be successful. We want to make sure that we take the time to fully explain how this would work so that parents will feel comfortable opting into this model rather than thinking that we're forcing their children to do something that they're not interested in.
Got it. Last question before I turn it over to the folks who are paying attention on the phone. There's the concept of year-round school, and then there's other concepts like summer programs, after-school programs, programs that happen during the holiday season, and what have you. I'm assuming you're looking at all of those items as well, right?
Absolutely, Senator. In fact, your office has done great work helping to be a partner with the school district in terms of facilitating reading opportunities for our young people during the time of the summer, during those holiday breaks, winter breaks. And we know that kids who are reading are engaged, and we have structured activities and support for them do better. We know this. We've seen it from the students that you've helped us to provide reading support to.
That's what we do. Read to succeed. Absolutely. All right, Dr. Wadlington, let's open it up. Jessica, who's first caller? Who we got first?
Before we go to the callers, I just want to remind everyone else that has not submitted a question yet, if you would like to submit a question or a comment to tonight's discussion, you can press *3 at any time tonight to get in our queue and talk to Senator Hughes and Dr. Wadlington. And first, we will go to Dolores from West Philly. Dolores, you're live.
Hi.
Hey, Dolores.
Hi, Senator. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. My question or my comment was more about the children and how the impact of going to school all year may have on them. My student is very active. She's going to Central High School this year, September.
Congratulations.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
I said congratulations.
Oh yeah. So she's been a good student all along, even through the pandemic. It was rough, but she made it through. Mm-hmm. But she looks forward to having time off, and we do a lot of activities. She is involved in soccer, volleyball, basketball, and karate. So she keeps a kind of full schedule, so she looks forward to downtime. So it's juggling it, and now when we're going to go to add Central to that, I think children do need to be constructively occupied, but I'm not sure that all 12 months of school is the answer. I'm not sure about that. So that was
Dr. Wallet, then what's your thoughts on that? Go ahead.
Well, first of all, let me tell you, my favorite aunt, It's my Aunt Dolores. So I love that name. let me say that we wouldn't have children going to school all the time from August 1st all the way to July 30th. What would happen is we would first take that regular 180-day calendar, and we would build in fall, winter, spring breaks all throughout the year. You just wouldn't have a 2 to 3 month long break in the summer. That's how we prevent the summer slide. Then during those breaks, like in the fall and in the winter, when other people are in school in some of those times, we would have some enrichment and fun opportunity, maybe some fun reading competitions. Some students could get some extra tutorial support if they need it. They could do maybe a little virtual learning during that time period. So they wouldn't be in a school building every day for 365 days. You would just take that 180 days and spread it out over the year so that's not a really, really long break. And then number two, we are going to propose to parents for the children that need it that we extend the day or the number of days so that they get more instructional time for the students who need it. If I'm behind, I might need more time to catch up. But I can't catch up unless I have the right amount of time and I've got to have the best teachers and principals. So that's really important. And so I hope that kind of sort of begins to answer that question.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Wildington. Thank you, Dolores. Appreciate your call. Jessica, who's next?
Next we have Sharita from West Philadelphia. Sharita, you're live?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Sharita, how are you?
I'm fine.
Great. What's your question?
I was just wondering if we are able to move forward with that plan for the 12-month school year, will that include a budget where the schools have an upgrade with their air conditioning system? I'm aware that a lot of schools are not up to grade with their air conditioning systems, and a lot of times the parents are called early to pick them up on those extreme heat waves and things of that nature.
Absolutely. That's a very good question, Senator. We're on a plan now that, barring any emergencies, we're on a five-year plan to get schools air-conditioned across the entire district. Until we get there, what we're doing this fall and over the course of the next year to get ready for next August is we're taking a look at what are the schools that have adequate air condition to have students in session during the summer, because we would not want to schedule a 12-month calendar in any school where they don't have adequate air condition or where the air condition systems just might be too strained and could break or not work in the summer. So we're taking the time to be very careful to pick the right schools because we want to make sure that once we do the 12-month calendar, we do not want to have to send any kids home early or cancel classes on hot weather days. So we're going to do our homework and make sure to pick the right schools.
And Dr. Watlin, you're suggesting, and this is a process that you're going to go through starting now and with the intent to get this done in August of 2024. So we're talking
That's
about
correct.
13 months from now.
That's correct.
And this is a process that is going to be pretty deliberative because we're only talking about 10 schools, 10 school buildings. Let me just ask this question. 10 out of how many school buildings are we teaching kids in now, sir?
We currently have 216 school facilities, so we're going to pick up to 10 out of 216.
Okay. All right, so if my math is correct, that's a little less than 5%, but, you know,
less
my math may not be right.
You're doing well, Senator.
I'm quick like that, all right? So it's not everybody. Here's what I would suggest. I would suggest trying to create a program that makes it so fun, interesting, and exciting that people want their school to be one of these schools to be picked, okay? But that's just me. That's just my, that's just me on a
that's
Wednesday
good.
Afternoon, you know?
That's good. That, you know, get some feedback, Senator.
Yeah, hey, just make it, almost like a competition. Yeah, we want, because this is exciting stuff. All right, let me go back to the callers. Jessica, who's next?
Next we have Eileen from West Philly. Eileen, you're live.
Hey, Eileen.
Hello,
how are you?
I'm wonderful.
I'm doing fantastic. What's
Great.
Going on?
This is what's going on with me. Okay, I am concerned about, I understand the pandemic and things of that nature, how it affects the children and everyone else out here. But with that said, several things that concern me, but one of the things that concern me is we have a lot of children out here who want to learn, and they come to school
yep.
to learn, and they look forward to learning, as well as the staff members and things of that nature who are there to provide for them. But yet we still have those few. If this example, we have a class of 30, and you have that three or four children who are able to take over the class to prevent, I'm going to use the word prevent, other children from learning because of distractions and things of that nature. What can we do? And I'm going to tell you some of my suggestions, but what can be done about this group of these same individuals every day that run the hallway, that just come to school from the time they walk in that door and cause commotion to the end of the day, and there's nothing that is being done as far as, have the parent come pick this child up, or let's send this child, well, of course, send the child back home, or put this child in another class or another area. What can we do to prevent these children from disturbing the other children who want to learn, who want the education? Because the way I see it right now, my opinion is this. If you don't want to be there, and you know like I know, there are children that come to school because parents just drop them off, boom, and they know he or she can barely read or write or anything, but maybe that's one of the distractions because he or she does not know how to do so and so. And they use that, okay, you know what, I'm just going to disturb because I don't want to be involved in this. I don't know how to read. I can barely read, or I need help in reading. Whatever it is, whatever their problem is, what can we do to correct this problem so that our other children can continue to go forward? Because there's a lot of distractions in the class. There's a lot of distractions in the hallway. They start fights. They do a lot of things that's unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, how can we rid this problem or some suggestions to that? Because
Eileen, gotta let Dr. Watlington answer the question, sis. Okay. All right. Thank you, Eileen. Go ahead, Dr. Watlington.
All right, Eileen. I'm gonna take a shot at it, and I know you're gonna tell me your suggestions too. I'm gonna look forward to listening if the senator gives us the floor. Let me say three really clear and specific things to you. Number one, when I walk into kindergarten classrooms across the city, I see the same thing I saw in North Carolina. I see kids who are interested, for the most part well-behaved. Many have their eyes wide open, really interested to learn about this thing called school. I don't see a lot of kindergartners who are just totally disengaged. They come excited. They got these fresh little haircuts, and when I give them a high five, say, I like your haircut, young man, young lady, you're looking good in your little outfit there. They smile, and sometimes they just wave. Sometimes they'll say something back. But they come, our kids generally come to the kindergarten and the lower grades bright-eyed, interested, and ready to see what we have for them. The way we prevent kids getting older in walking halls and not engaged and interrupting the learning for other children is we've got to make sure that by that third grade, they read and do math on grade level. We must up our game. That's number one. Number two, we've got to do a better job in the school district of working with our parents as equal partners, because parents are always their children's first teachers. Now, how do we want to do that? In this strategic plan, I heard from a lot of parents that they need more help and support from the school district so they can help their children. So we're going to relaunch something called Parent University that I'm told existed here when Dr.
Yes.
Arlene Ackerman was the superintendent.
Ackerman.
And we're going
yes.
to get knee-deep
yes.
into supporting families. Let me tell you the third thing we want to do that we can do. We've got to invest more in our teachers' professional development. And let me tell you what I mean. When I was a teacher, I taught high school. I was a high school principal. I was an elementary principal. I taught high school at the high school level. In all the years that I taught, I only sent one student to the office, one. I was not afraid of the children, and we've got to help make sure that teachers are not afraid of our children. We've got to help support teachers to know how to manage the classroom, how to build those collaborative relationships with parents, and how to really get these kids engaged and captivated at an early age. We just have a different kind of student who has access to cell phones, video games, 24/7 information. So we've got to change in schools to meet our kids where they are right now. And so I think, number one, if we engage our kids when they come into kindergarten and make sure that they read and do math on grade level by third grade, they don't have to act up and do all this other stuff because it's hiding the fact that I'm behind. Two, we've got to work with parents by relaunching Parent University. And three, we've got to do more to support our hardworking teachers so that they can know how to best reach and connect with our young people. Those are three
Great.
Things that we can do in the strategic plan.
And thank you, Dr. Watlington. And you know, what I've found and what I've observed, sometimes the most disruptive student or the student that's not interested or just doesn't feel good about school, sometimes that student is a student who's not being challenged and may need an academic experience that is different or may need to be touched differently academically, all right? And more exposure to different kinds of education, different kinds of teaching or different subject matter or what have you can really be impactful. So the environment and skilled teachers, all right, who are really invested in and given all the tools that they need can be the ones that turn some of those young people around. And the disruptive one may become the one that is that is the most thrilling one. The whole story of August Wilson, I don't know about if you know this one, Dr. Watlington, August Wilson, the great playwright, one of America's great playwrights,
absolutely.
was not a lover of school. He would cut school in his high school years and go to the library because he found that everything in the library was more interesting than what he was learning in classroom. And so he read about 200 books while he was in the library, and because traditional schooling didn't quite work for him. And now, you know, long story short, became one of America's great playwrights. It's a very interesting story, but it's an indication of how our young people learn differently. Different children learn differently, and we got to expand the exposure of how to connect with them. I'm sorry, Dr. Watlington, you the guest, not me. So
I love that, Senator. Senator, may I just say that I experienced the same, something very similar with my middle son. My
okay.
middle, I have three boys. They're
uh-huh.
all three a little different. Love them all three to death. My middle son, when he was in the early grades, teacher would call me and say, Mr. Watlington, we're trying to do this in school, and Aaron is not quite where he needs to be. He's not doing what we ask him to do. He's got a book over there in the corner. He just wants to read his little book. And I said,
mm-hmm.
well, here's what you do. Don't penalize him. See that as a strength and figure out how to build that. And, you know, he's interested in animated figures and those. Build the curriculum around him. By the way, teach him about some stuff where he can see himself in the course material that you're teaching. And there's a way that you can reach and connect with him. What that taught me, Senator, we are absolutely committed to recruiting and retaining more Black and Latino males to
yep.
teach in this
yep.
school district. Because guess who year? I've studied the data for the past decade. Guess who is at the bottom in academic performance consistently and is at the top in terms of out-of-school suspension? Black boys. It is not okay. Mm-hmm. We've got to do better by our students. Now, in fairness, black boys have the highest suspension rate across the United States. There's data that's showing that the fastest growing suspension rate is among black girls, although black boys have the highest suspension rate. So we've got to build schools that meet the needs of our young people, and I can say that as an African-American male, experienced that with my very own son. So it's really important that we diversify the teaching force, too.
There you go. There you go. Very important. Thank you, Dr. Watlington. Folks, make sure if you listen, if you have a question, press *3. If you have a question, press *3, and we'll try to get you in the queue and get your question answered. Jessica, who's next?
Next, we have Vanessa from West Philly. Vanessa, you're live.
Hey, Vanessa. Vanessa.
Are you on mute?
Hey, Senator, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Vanessa. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. You were out doing some affirmations with my kids at Showmont the other day. They had a good time with you.
How about that? That was fun.
That's what school's supposed to be like sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
I did have a question. I did have some questions for Dr. Watlington in reference to extending the school year. I think it's an amazing idea. We are all well aware that kids' education went on quite a decline during COVID, and a lot of that damage is irreparable. My question is more so geared towards the interests of academic professionals and their supports. So one thing I think might be helpful in combating what you were just talking about is like reducing those class sizes. I know a lot of teachers that are saying they have like classes of 20 to 30 kids sometimes, and some of them might be SPED, and some of them might be, you know, like more so general education, and I know that could be really hard to manage. I think that might really help with, as that other woman was speaking about the distractions in the classroom, just finding ways to hone in on children, their specific skills, talents, and interests, and how we could build curriculums around that. So that's what we could do to support both the students and the teachers. My question about the school year, however, was how much research or insight have you gathered from the actual teachers about their willingness to work that kind of school year? I know a lot of academic professionals go into that field because they value their time off during the summers. A lot of them use that time to supplement their income. The average teacher making about $50,000-$60,000, a lot of them use their summers to either vacate for their own mental health or to find some type of supplemental income, doing summer camps, driving Lyft, and things like that. So I was thinking about, you know, how much information was gathered from them to see if they're in support of that, like what research was done as far as their interests and what they kind of think would be the best course of action. Yeah,
thank you for that question. Vanessa, let me say two things. First, I appreciate your point about reminding us to take a look at class sizes. There's a famous class size study out of Tennessee called the STAR study. This was years ago, and they found that in the early grades where you can get that class size down to 12 to 15 or less with a strong teacher, they were really able to move the needle with kids learning to read. Now, on to this question about what are we doing to connect with teachers. This fall semester, we'll have one train track working closely with parents to make the case about year-round schooling and the benefits so that they can say, hey, this is going to be a great experience. We want in. We'll have a train running with collaborating with our unions, the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers and the Principals CASA Union, and we're working very closely with Mr. Jerry Jordan, Dr. Robin Cooper. And on a third train track, we'll be making the case to sit down and talk with teachers to say, look, this may not be for everybody, but I think there will be folks who say, look, I'm willing to try this, one, because I want to help children, and two, I might like that break several times during the year. And I can tell you that I've had a small number of teachers to say to me personally, so far, I'm interested. Had at least one principal to say, I want to do this at my school. And I said, we're going to take the time to talk to lots of people before we make any decisions so that we'll do exactly what you just said. We want to make sure that we are definitely attending to our teachers and our staff's mental health. And so we want to take, that's why we don't want to launch this too fast. We want to take the time to see who are the folks who would be interested. And I'll look forward to keeping the senator and the full community updated on what we find as we go in the fall semester, what kind of feedback we're getting.
Great. Thanks, Dr. Wallington. Thanks, Vanessa. Appreciate seeing you out at Charlemont. I had a great time out there. Jessica, who's next?
Next, we have Alexis from West Philadelphia. Alexis, you are live.
Hello.
Hey, Alexis, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
I'll give you my question. It is, thinking about out of 200 schools, you're picking 10, and I'm just wondering, is it going to be transportation for the children and what that would look like?
We are taking a hard look at all the schools and taking a look at what the transportation options will be. We haven't gotten that far down the road, but we do know that depending on where parents are and where the schools are, we're looking at all options so that there are no obstacles or barriers to parents who want to take advantage of this opportunity. If transportation is a barrier or is needed, we're putting it on the table. We are going to put the resources, no matter what's needed, we're going to put the resources in place to make these pilots successful.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Wallington. Thanks, Alexis. Jessica, who's next?
Next, we have Tira from West Philadelphia. You are
all right.
Live.
Tira?
Good evening. How are you there?
Good evening.
Hey, now.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm fine. Great. I just have a question, being a mom of a child with special needs. How will your special needs children fit in the equation? We all know that they already have their own set of issues and learning disabilities that they have to deal with. So is the all around the 12-month implementation, is it going to include them in what will be the curriculum for them?
That's a very good question. I appreciate it. I think that special education students can have a particular advantage with this model because all the children who experience learning loss in the summer, some of the first group of students that we need to protect from that learning loss are our special needs students who have individualized education plans. That's number one. Number two, we're taking the time to dig into how we can do an even better job of following and implementing our special needs students' individualized education plans. We're also thinking about how this might impact special education students. So we will be happy to keep parents updated. We're going to have a two-way conversation. But some of our most vulnerable students need, I believe, to have the opportunity to be at the front of the line if their parents want to pursue this opportunity. Now, I also know when we do these pilots well, we're going to study the data every year. We're going to get feedback from students and parents, including our special needs families, every year, so that when we report out what's different about the year-round schools, we're hopeful that we'll have positive data to share that will make other people say, well, even if I don't want to be in the pilot, let me sit back and see how this goes. If it goes well, I want to consider it. Our goal is to make all of our students successful, including our special needs students. They need to go right to the front of the line with everything we have to offer, at least make those opportunities available to them.
Great. Thank you, Tara. Thank you, Dr. Watlington. Very good question. Getting some good questions in here, Dr. Watlington.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Getting some good ones. Getting some good ones. Jessica, who's next?
Next, we have Rhonda from West Philly. Rhonda, you're live.
Hey, Rhonda. Rhonda, where are you?
Hello?
There's Rhonda. Rhonda's there. What's up, Rhonda?
Hi. No, it's not Rhonda. It's Brenda from West Philly.
Okay. All right, Brenda. What's up, Brenda?
Okay, so, hey, how you doing, Sister Hughes? Welcome
I'm doing good.
Welcome. I would like to welcome Dr. Wellington. And
thank you.
I would like to say I am a former school district employee. I worked in Head Start for 18 years before I was forced to retire because of health issues. However, I agree. I just want to let Dr. Wellington know that I totally agree with him with everything he said in response to Eileen's question on the first three topics. How I acquired my job with Head Start was because I volunteered. My daughter was in Head Start for 2 years, and I volunteered for 2 years. Okay, after 2 years of volunteering, I was able to gain employment. And I stayed at this one particular school for 18 years in which I loved. So with that being said, my question is, I've always advocated for the school district of Philadelphia pre-K program. I think it's an excellent program. Like you said, with the parents volunteering, we're involved. We learn more about what our kids are learning. So I think that we really should push for more parent involvement in the schools, especially when it comes to the upper grades, you know. So, again, my question is this. I'm raising two of my grandsons. They no longer are in the public school district because of the classroom sizes and everything like that. I put them in charter school. So with this, how will you pick the 10 schools? And will they be picked by lottery? And if so, is charter schools going to be able to be a part of this pilot program?
Okay. Thanks, Brenda. Appreciate you. Go ahead, Dr. Wellington.
Brenda, I really appreciate that question. And thank you for your 18 years of service. I'm so sorry that we lost you, but I'm glad you're able to tend to whatever health issue at the time. But we thank you for what you did for Head Start. Really important. Now, we look at year-round school options for all of the children of Philadelphia. If kids in charter schools, which are public schools, or the traditional public schools want to raise their hand and say, we want to be a part of this, we welcome them all because these are all our children. So we don't see one group over here and one group over there. Any students who want to be a part of this opportunity can enroll in one of the schools that can opt to come to one of the schools where this will be in place. I think that's really, really important to have access available to everybody, whether you're a traditional public school student or a charter school student. I can't remember that question, Senator. Did I miss the second part?
No, I think you got it. Well, I think I'm hearing the direction that you're considering right now is it would be a building. Would it be kind of like open? It wouldn't be open enrollment, would it? Would it be to anyone who wants to join the school because it has a year-round academic calendar? You can't go in and out. Once you enroll, you gotta be good to go, right?
It would be just like one of the criteria, special any kind of other citywide admit school. We have a date by which anybody who's interested, whether in the traditional public schools or the charter schools, to raise their hand and say, "Hey, we're interested," and you would enroll by a certain date, and you would pick that school option for that school year.
Okay,
that's correct. You wouldn't go back and forth. You say, "This is the school I want for next year."
Okay. All right, and it's not just like a neighborhood school or anything like that. It's more of an open enrollment kind of thing. Okay, got it. All right, that's very helpful. All right, Jessica, who's next?
Next, we have Anita from Shore Bay Mansion. Anita, you
Strawberry know? Mansion. Strawberry Mansion. You were just over there, Jessica. Strawberry Mansion.
In the house. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Senator Hughes, for having me.
Thanks, Anita. What you got for us?
Dr. Wellington, well, I have a two-part question.
Go ahead.
First part question, as being a district employee for the Department of Early Childhood, I would like to know if part of the pilot project is the Head Start going to be included. And the second part is as a concerned parent. I have a child at Central who have been working since middle school to be a pro ball player. So in the summer, he engages in tournaments and sport camps. So what happens to the students who engage in such camps and things over the summer if their schools are selected?
That is a very good question, Anita. First, I want to take the piece about camps. That's one of the things we're taking the time to study this fall. How does this impact students who are involved in athletics, extracurricular programs in the summer, and camps? We're thinking about how we can make sure to try to design these 12-month calendars where we don't exclude children who participate in camps, athletics, et cetera. We've not landed on exactly what that needs to look like yet, but it's on our radar. We're taking the time to dig deep into that. The second part of what you mentioned is about will Head Start students be included? Right now, we know it's important to focus on students who we traditionally have in grades kindergarten through 12th grade. Now, what I also know is that there are states that have under-enrolled schools, particularly some of the urban areas, and one of the things they do in some of those under-enrolled schools is that they bring students prior to pre-K or kindergarten into those schools, and Head Start and other providers work together with teachers in kindergarten through fifth, sixth grade to kind of work together to get those Head Start kids ready. Now, right now, we don't have in our plan to bring students prior to kindergarten into the year-round model, but that doesn't mean that we won't do that at some point. The facilities project team that we have in the district is taking a look at how we can best utilize some of the space in our under-enrolled schools. So that's one of the things that we've been talking about. We've got a lot more work to do there. We'll be glad to keep Senator Hughes and the community updated as we get more information.
Great. That was a great answer. Good question, Anita. From Strawberry Mansion, Jessica. All right. Anita from Strawberry Mansion.
Strawberry Mansion.
All right, we're coming down to the close here. Who's next, Jess?
Next we have Anaya from West Philly. Anaya, you're live.
Hi. How are you?
Hey, Anaya.
Hi. I go to Central High School, and what I was wondering is, will there be, like, added quarters? And, like, for the breaks, like, if we will have, like, winter break, summer break, like, for each quarter, like, is it going to be, like, 2 weeks in between, like, how most year-round schools are, or, like, 3 weeks in the summer, like, I was wondering that.
Yes, very good question, Anaya. My proposal right now will be that we have those quarterly breaks after every quarter, after each of the four quarters, and that during the break, the students who need it and want it can still have access to some fun enrichment opportunities that doesn't feel like regular school days. To make it fun, I forget how the senator said it at the very beginning, but we to design this initiative so it feels like fun and something we want to be there. But those quarterly breaks will absolutely be included because all of us need a break. Teachers need a break. Students need a break from time to time. Yes, ma'am.
At least Central High School folks calling into my call. How about that? All right. All right, Jessica, I think we may be hitting up on the last one, looking at the clock. Who's next?
Okay, last call. We will hear from Victoria from Overbrook. Victoria, you're live.
Hey, Victoria.
Hey, good evening, Senator. Good evening, Dr.
Good evening.
Watts.
Good evening, Victoria from Overbrook.
Yes, that's me. Listen, I have questions. First of all, will there be students on your committee?
Absolutely. I have a superintendent student advisory council. That will be the first group that we are going to engage to get some feedback. But we're not going to stop there. We're going to get out in the community and talk in the schools and talk with students at the elementary grades, at those middle grades, and at the high school grades, because they may have some good feedback for us that we need to consider as we develop these pilot plans.
Awesome. And I guess my last question, which is a bit more involved, and if you don't have time to answer the whole thing, I can understand it. I've ushered several kids through the school. Some were eligible for a highly academic school. Some were not. Some were those hallway runners that the woman talked about earlier.
I've seen one or two since I've been here. I know what you're talking about.
Yes, I got some IEPs in the house. I got some things going on. My last child graduates this coming school year. So my question is, based on the experiences I've had, I've homeschooled, I've private schooled, some hybrid kinds of sort of stuff, but some I'm looking or hoping that there are some intentional hybrid opportunities built into whatever model you come up with. If it's not something being considered, please do. I have one child, two of them, that we used to tell me, I need a mental health day. It's so helpful to have that child learn from home for a day so that when he or she returned to the school, they didn't cause the drama in the hallway that might have ensued. So if you haven't considered that, I would encourage you to do so. Some parents are capable of helping kids better at home, and if they're not, put them through that parent academy and give a course on cyber schooling and handling your Google Classroom for your child or with your child. Those are just my suggestions.
Victoria, let me say, I actually went to the virtual school graduation and had a chance to speak to our senior class this year, and it was so interesting to learn from the students who graduated from our virtual high school this school year. So we'll give some thought to what you just said about whether or not a hybrid model makes sense. Also, I've heard the senator say this many times, and he's absolutely right about now that we have these computers, Google Chromebooks, we should be doing 24/7 learning opportunities, not the old school way of you just learn mm-hmm. between X hour and X hour. And so we're giving a lot of thought about how we make use of this technology, how we meet our young people where they are, and have 24/7 learning. So I appreciate that feedback. We'll give it some very careful consideration and thought.
Very good. All right, Dr. Wadlington, thank you so very much to all our callers. Thank you so very much. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everyone. Linda Norris, I see you. I just left East Falls the other day. What's going on, Linda Norris from East Falls? I don't need to call out all these names. I see a whole bunch of friends on the list. I see a lot of them. This is not going to be the last time we have this conversation, folks. We'll continue to have more dialogue in public forums like this about this idea of increased opportunities for learning, the idea of year-round schools, making sure that there's extra programs in the summer, in the holiday periods, after school, what have you, sometimes even before school, sometimes on Saturdays and weekends. You know, we're going to continue to have this conversation because that it is paramount that we give every kind of help that we can provide to our young people for them to get the education that they so desperately need and that they deserve to have. We don't see education as a chore. We see education as a way to fulfill dreams and be huge contributors to the broader society. And of course, with the academic pandemic that our children are suffering in, We've got to do everything we can to get them to rebound in a fun way. I will say this, Dr. Watlington. I think I put a bug in your ear at the beginning of the conversation. We need to make this so much fun that schools will be the competition. I want my school to be a year-round school because it gets
absolutely
so much fun and so exciting. All right? So, you know, I think I probably gave one of your staff a little bit more work that they wasn't planning, but I'm just
sure
saying.
You sure
did. Okay. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
So thank,
good suggestion.
Dr. Watson, thank you so very much. Really, really appreciate you and appreciate all the work and the time that you're putting into this, and always your availability to talk to me and our constituents is just very, 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 very great, and we thank you so very much for it. Thanks.
Let me just say I want to thank you also, and I appreciate
okay.
all your listeners in the 7th Senatorial District. And thank you for everything you do. And please keep fighting for us in Harrisburg. We need you. Keep fighting.
Oh, you know
for us.
We will. You know we will. You know we will. We're not going to give up that fight. Thanks for everybody for participating in our telephone town hall conversation. To those who listened in, and to those who asked questions and gave us suggestions. If you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you shortly. Thanks again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office in Philadelphia, 215-879-7777. That's 215-879-7777. They say you got to say it three times for it to sink in, 215-879-7777. Or just simply visit my website at senatorhughes.com. Thanks again, everybody. Thanks, Jess. Thanks, Dr. Watlington. Appreciate y'all. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Take good care.